title is slightly different than announced. Some people were surprised to see what I wanted to talk about in the program. Anyway, so here it is, generalized Langlands VOAs and generalized tau functions. What this is based on is work from the last few years with Murat Alim, Joanna Kuman, Pietro Longhi, Eli Pomuni, and Arpan Saha and Ivan Tulli. And the talk will have three parts. The first is to provide some context, which hopefully will situate the story I want to talk about mainly in the context that, mostly discussed, it seems, at these workshops, that is supersymmetric QFT with n equals 4 supersymmetry in 3 or 4 dimensions. So as I said, there will be, I think, order of 8 slides, which is just a review, basically, of something I relatively recently learned from, several people's work. This is reflecting my, to some extent, limited understanding of this work. And of course, as usual, this then goes with the risk of some errors or inaccuracies, but the people who can correct me or supplement or make more precise statements are here in the audience. So I hope this will work. The second part will then be a special case of that story, which in fact, as I shall explain, connects to a story related to tau functions, topological string partition functions, and other things that we studied lately. And the third part will be a somewhat conjectural outlook based on some observations. So that is the plan. I understand there will be a break in about an hour or so. But yeah, in any case, of course, the rules, I hope, are clear. Interrupt me any time for questions or anything like that, or remarks, of course. All right, so I want to start by saying a few words on sort of a very bird's eye point of view on some recent work on n equals 4 equals 3 twisted SUSY QFT. And I very much hope that for details, at least for some aspects, I can refer to lectures from last week. I couldn't check sort of in any in detail whether he's covered, but it seemed like many of the things that I shall need have been covered there. Tudor will see a familiar picture here. In fact, in order to keep the time for preparation in reasonable bounds, I have copied some of the pictures from his recent paper with Thomas Kreuzig, Nick Garner, and Nathan Geer. And there will be more of these pictures, so I hope that's okay. Good, but let's now start with the actual science. So we're considering theories which have a reasonably large amount of supersymmetry in 3 dimensions. And the story which has attracted considerable attention lately is, the twists that the supersymmetry allows us to do. There are, following a pattern that is known from topological sigma models, 2 types of twists called A and B twists. And the key feature that we need, and that is most of what we need to say here, is that these twists are making the theory topological in a 3-dimensional bulk, but we can and will consider 3 manifolds which have boundary, and then these twists would only be holomorphic on the boundary. But this is what is exactly what makes the story rich and interesting. So on relatively general grounds then, one can observe that, you can place observables of this theory that we're considering denoted O of C, depending holomorphically on insertion points on the boundary. And here is a picture that we stole shamelessly, or that I stole shamelessly from Tudor et al.'s paper. So on rather general grounds, these observables will generate vertex operator algebras simply by holomorphicity, and then considering what happens in OPEs of observables located on the boundary. So this is in this strict form, I'm formulating it here. These are results going back to work of Castello and Gagliotto, and Castello, Kreuzig and Gagliotto, but I would like to stress that important developments in parallel have been done by Sergei Gukov and his collaborators. And okay, so this story has unfolded to a certain extent now, and has revealed a picture which looks like a generalization of the very well-known relationship between the topological Chern-Simons theory in three dimensions and the Wessman-Witten conformal field theories in two dimensions. And so again, here this picture captures important aspects of this picture. We not only have these local fields on the boundary, O of Z, et cetera, but there may be line observables which can have endpoints on the boundary, Wilson lines or whatever line observables, and with the endpoints are associated, according to the emerging dictionary, representations of the VOAs that the boundary observables generate. So there are some attempts, towards axiomatizing the resulting story, following a little bit the paradigm of TQFTs in three dimension or higher, where, however, of course, should notice that one is stepping out of this realm somewhat by having here this holomorphic dependence on the boundary. But in any case, one would, and this is very much in line with the Wessman-Witten Chern-Simons relationship, associate vector spaces, which will be the vector spaces of conformal blocks, about which we shall talk more, to the Riemann surfaces representing the boundary. So we may more specifically consider particular boundaries which are represented by Riemann surfaces of, say, a fixed genus G and maybe a number of punctures. And then, say, to formal disks, formal puncture disks, what this functor, generalized TQFT functor would assign would be a category of line defects, which are these gadgets ending at boundary points. This then, in terms of the VOA, would be assigned to the categories of VOA representations. However, it seems really that the story that you're getting when wandering in the large world of N equals 4, D equals 3, SUSY QFT can be in many respects much richer than really Wessman-Witten Chern-Simons. For example, there is always or generically expected to be interesting derived structures. So vector spaces should be DG vector spaces, categories of line operators should be DG categories of et cetera, so, well, this is, sort of a very schematic outline of the type of picture that is good to have in the back of your minds for, well, several aspects of this talk. All right, so on the other hand, we can go up in dimension one step. So rather than three-dimensional QFTs, we could consider a very specific four-dimensional QFT, which also has attracted a lot of attention, in particular in relation to geometric Langlands correspondence initiated by work of Kapustin and Witten and then developed by many others. What is of particular interest for this talk is that this can be used to engineer particularly nice or interesting examples of the type of story that we very schematically outlined on the previous slide. Namely, to do this, what one could consider, for example, are, say, the setup of N equals 4 super Young-Mills, on manifolds of the type M4, being product, Cartesian product of some M2, which is just an interval times real axis for time. And then there is, again, a Riemann surface C. It's the same Riemann surface C that will appear throughout the talk. All right, so in that case, one is, of course, supposed to specify boundary conditions, which should be compatible with the supersymmetry of n equals 4 super Young Mills on the ends of that interval, thereby defining fully the theory on such space times. And as one has here an interval of a finite length, one could consider a flow to the infrared in which basically then one expects to get an effective representation in terms of the three dimensional theory. So in this way, one can view the n equals 4 super Young Mills theory as a gadget to engineer interesting three dimensional n equals 4 QFTs as discussed previously. So to give an example, but again, I will be here very sketchy and schematic. There is a theory, a three-dimensional theory called T of G, somewhat unusual type of theory, so to set up notations here, we're considering G, a compact Lie group. In most of the talk, it will be SUN. And a way to engineer it is to consider a setup like here, which one can represent in different ways, either using a Dirichlet type boundary condition, say on the left boundary of the strip, and it's S dual on the other boundary, which one can conveniently represent by using something called S duality interface, which is three-dimensional theory, to which you can couple in different ways the n equals 4 super Young Mills, which basically implements or represents the S-duality that these n equals 4 super Young Mills theory enjoys. And sort of schematically, you can, by moving this S-duality interface, for example, towards the right boundary, then implement S topological invariance in the bulk should allow you to do. You can implement the S-duality action on the boundary conditions, which would swap the B tilde 0, 1, which was the usual Dirichlet, by B tilde 1, 0, which then is basically, if you like, defined in this way. Of course, in many cases, there are more explicit or sometimes, if you're lucky, Lagrangian representations about all this. I don't want to talk. Sometimes there is no Lagrangian description for these theories, and one then appeals to somewhat more implicit definitions of this type, for example, using IR limits of configurations of n equals 4 super Young Mills with certain boundary conditions. So for detailed descriptions, I would refer to, Tudor, Davide, or others here in the audience. This is as far as I want to describe it. All right, so an important player for the following will be a class of three-dimensional theories, which can be engineered in this way by tweaking it a little bit. So this is really taking, this is really the example that was the main player in the recent work of Kreuzig, Dimoff, Garner, and Gier, which defined a family of n equals 4 equals 3 QFT, for which the notation TGK, where K is positive integer, will be used, and G was the compact Lie group as before. And here's indicated how sort of the previous constructions are tweaked. It, first of all, basically, it replaces the boundary condition that we had previously, which was a Dirichlet type, by another one, which is of Neumann type. So that is one well, that is one of the changes here. And on the other hand, well, on top of maybe S-duality interface, we know that the S-duality group of n equals 4 super young nils has more than one generator. Namely, there's also a T-generator, also represented by a duality interface defect. And well, or alternatively, you can simply then appeal to pictures where we have traded here essentially the left boundary for a different one, okay, whose detailed definition is indicated by this picture, but otherwise I don't want to go into further details about it. Important remark is about topological twists. There are topological twists in 4D that are famous and relatively well known, going back to Kapustin and Witten, where there is a parameter called capital Psi introduced for parametrizing family of topological twists of the four-dimensional n equals 4 super young nils theory, and that is the starting point of all this Kapustin-Witten analysis. And what one can argue is that if you're doing this relationship, or if you're invoking the relationship to three-dimensional QFT via flow to the IR, then it would amount to a topological twist in the three-dimensional theory that you can describe directly as an A-type twist based on the n equals to 4, d equals to 3 supersymmetry. Okay, so that is what in the following shall mostly be considered. And well, we argued that on very general grounds, there are boundary VOAs if you are considering three-dimensional SUSY QFTs of the type of interest here in the presence of boundaries. And so this was one of the main, I think, claims or well, part of the discussion in Kreuzig-Dimov-Degana-Gier to come up with a proposal what it would be for this particular class of three-dimensional QFTs. Namely, these were claimed or conjectured or proven to be the so-called Fagin-Tipunin logarithmic VOAs denoted FT, well, K is a level-like parameter, and one can basically associate them. There's a little typo here that should be G. There are such guys for any V algebra of a compact loop group G, but as indicated, we'll mostly restrict attention to SLN, well, actually in a little moment to SL2 to go a little farther with the story. And yeah, and a way to see that is based, a way to see this identification can be based on the idea of corner VOAs emerging from the study of four-dimensional n equals 4 super young nils. So let me indicate sort of the type of game that is being played there. So what are corner VOAs? All right. So, well, what is clear, n equals 4 super young nils admits three-dimensional boundaries decorated with certain boundary conditions. And then they can be described in various ways as boundary conditions for fields or as a coupling to additional degrees of freedom on a three-dimensional boundary, et cetera, et cetera. But of course, that's not the end of this story. It could happen that three-dimensional boundaries meet at two-dimensional corners. When you do the twists, you make the 4D bulk topological. But it turns out that if you're studying the story in 4D, then you can leave corners holomorphic. So there is a pretty much analogous story then, however, now one dimension higher, saying if the twist makes the corners holomorphic, then you can have fields inserted at the corners, which are still having, of course, a two-dimensional freedom for their insertion points. And you can study their OPEs, and their OPEs would define what is called a corner VOA. And sort of the first key steps in this program were made by Gagliotto, Thomas Kreuzig Gagliotto, Rabchak Gagliotto, and well, by now also developed by many others. So, but again, you can think of effective 3D descriptions for a theory which a priori is defined in 4D terms, as before, say, the strip. Now you can do similar games of, say, flowing to the IR in the case that you're talking about corners. And if you do that, then in fact, you would basically identify the corner VOA, which came from the 4D n equals 4, with the boundary VOAs of the effective 3D description that you're getting in the IR. And so these two pictures are supposed to give you a flavor of how that works. So on the one hand, sort of here in the picture on the bottom left, well, basically what we would be seeing here on the right is the 4D picture where you have a corner formed out of boundary conditions B1K. In the bulk, you have a theory where the twist parameter is the psi, and you have another boundary, well, whatever it is. So this doesn't matter here so much. Then you expect to have a 3D description where here, well, all the two dimensions associated to the Riemann surface are suppressed. So there is only then sort of the leftover time direction in which you have a three-dimensional theory, the theory we introduced before, TANK. And on the boundary, which is now the two-dimensional guy, we have VOA, which is the VOA DNK conjecture to be equivalent to Fagin to CUNY algebras by Kreutzig et al. So that is, well, one entry to the dictionary, one piece of the sort of one ingredient of the preparations here. Another is sort of to be a little clearer or have a pictorial representation of the relation between conformal blocks in the corner VOAs and the states that we're having when we consider, say, the theory on the strip. So I cross R, and again, also here, the Riemann surface dimensions are suppressed, where then sort of you would be having the very general identification between space of conformal blocks in the VOA, which lives on the boundary, and the Homm spaces or spaces of states in these topological twisted n equals 4 super Young Mills. And yeah, what the corner does for you is to it may create particular states in this space of states. So that is sort of the schematic formal setup which we want to work with. All right, so then, yes, my goal, and this is what I'm in the process of doing, is to give some idea on the type of arguments that Kreutzig, Dimoft, Garner, and Gier used to figure out what the VOA is for these theories T, A, G, K. So this is based on sort of the calculus of corner VOAs that was introduced by Gaiotto, Kreutzig, Gaiotto, Rabchak, Gaiotto. And it starts from sort of basic examples of corner VOAs where it's simple to figure out what they are. And here, again, we're having sort of a basic set of boundary conditions, which are of Dirichlet or Neumann type or certain generalizations thereof. I will mostly not introduce the details about this, but okay, anyway. So here, for example, well, I had examples of this, like here. No, I don't have everything what I need, so okay. Apologize. Anyway, there is two boundary conditions of Neumann type, and its S dual on that corner would give a W algebra, but in some sense, even more simple would be here Dirichlet type with a Neumann type or S dual of Neumann type, which would give an affine VOA at a level where it is found convenient to subtract the dual Coxeter number such that critical level. Is easier to detect as a value of the parameter psi equals to zero, or interesting other limit is psi to infinity, which is a classical limit for the affine VOA. And yeah, replacement of one of the boundary conditions by a Norman type boundary condition would amount to gauging a flavor symmetry that this configuration can have, ending up with a statement that it amounts on the level of VOAs to a Greenfeld-Sokolov reduction, producing from the fine VOA the principal W algebra, so by reduction with respect to principal nilpotent element, so the most standard W algebra that is known, in particular, sort of most of our time when speaking of SL2, this will of course be a good old Virasoro algebra as an example. All right, so this is the flavor of this calculus of corner VOAs. Well, this is just the sort of basic building blocks, but what one can do is sort of to come up with conjectures on what this is by sort of slicing boundary components. So,
sorry, before you explain that, can I ask a question?
Sure.
You say that this is a toolkit for building corner VOAs. Can you just repeat kind of what's the, in these pictures, what's the kind of input and what's the output of these constructions?
Okay, so these are, I mean, in some sense, it's better to call it a dictionary. So there is, of course, something that we hope in physics to be able to construct, at least ultimately, which is the N equals 4 super young wheels with certain boundary conditions that can be specified quite explicitly, as long at least as it is a Dirichlet and a Neumann type. And then what I'm stating here is the answer that Gagliotto and his collaborators found for what then can be the VOAs supported in corners. Okay, so it's a kind of, well, the VOAs that can appear are no longer arbitrary. They're determined or restricted by what boundary conditions meet there. And here is just the statement of the answer that they came up with.
So are you saying that is there some, like, you're telling us all the possible interfaces between these boundary conditions, or you're telling us one particular one, or you're telling us a way to construct one?
The statement is, if you're very specific about the boundary condition you want to pick, like here, then there's basically one and only one possible VOA sitting at the corner.
Okay, and what? Okay, so why that, is that? Why is that? That that's constrained so much that there's only one possible VOA.
Okay. So for this, I would ideally like to refer to Davide. I'm not sure if he's around already. A way maybe to argue it could that sort of quickly comes to my mind is you could appeal to the relation between the four-dimensional theories and the three-dimensional theories. So then when you have boundary conditions, say on the two sides of the strip, it defines a very specific 3D theory. When you have a very specific 3D theory and you twist it, then on its boundary, unless you insert there something extra, then it will determine what kind of fields are allowed to live on the boundary, and thereby determines the VOA. So that is a quick attempt at an answer, which is non-ideal, I'm sure, but we can return to this in discussion, and maybe others can help with a crisp further explanation.
Great, thanks.
Is this a property of this particular two boundary conditions, or is it the property, was it true for any two boundary conditions?
My understanding of this dictionary is that when you fix two boundary conditions, there is then an associated VOA that is basically determined by this game. And it starts from figuring out what are the 3D theories, or you can probably do it in 4D as well, that you get. And then on its boundary, the algebra of local boundary operators is determined by what you have, and what you get are these VOAs. Does it answer?
Maybe, okay, sorry. Oh, no, I have to think about it. I'm just wondering, is there a statement that any two boundary conditions produce you something like a VOA uniquely? Or it's, you have to require something about those boundary conditions?
I'm not sure about any. And here again, yeah, Davide would be good to have around. However, I think what I think I understood is that there is a definite class of boundary conditions, and we may just restrict our attention for today's purpose to this class of boundary conditions. I mean, the boundary conditions here of, say, Neumann and Dirichlet type and whatever S-duality does to them in n equals to 4. For this class of boundary conditions, there is a very precise dictionary associating VOAs to any pairs of such boundary conditions. And I'm just trying to give you the flavor of this dictionary here on this slide. Is this okay, a little better?
Yes, thank you.
All right, so I wanted to indicate that sort of due to the topological nature, you expect to be able to get a certain calculus of boundary conditions, which leads to alternative representations of these VOAs. Ultimately, and well, I can really not do justice here of this story at all, related to coset constructions in VOAs of various types. And well, there's an industry, I think, now emerging, Thomas Kreuzig and these people are very active in. So simply you could think of such a corner as being IR limit of something where one say separates the two corners by inserting another type of boundary condition, but again from the set here of our interest in between. So this should be as a TQFT with holomorphic boundary be equivalent. This is what this say general TQFT lore predicts, and so on. And you can, and I cannot understand you well. There was a question. I could not understand because it was corrupted in the.
May I ask a quick question? Is there a particular reason why you draw your basic boundaries at the right angle?
No, this is convenience, right? So an alternative picture is this one here, which was, for example, taken from a paper of Frankel and Gagliotto. So this would be an alternative picture, which due again to topological invariants and so on, is expected to be equivalent.
Maybe for
me. It's graphical convenience. That is my understanding that, well, it just it looks nicer.
Maybe for mathematicians could be more convenient if you make them parallel sitting on the same line and meeting at these 2D interfaces. So then you get the idea of a two-category.
That is right. Yes, you prefer this picture here, right?
No, the other way.
The other way. Okay.
Fully unfold to straight.
Oh, fully unfold. Okay.
Yes. The 180 instead of.
I think I can partly understand, but okay, for the time, bear with me and let me use sort of what I took from the literature. Yeah, but I think I agree. In any case, there is a bit of freedom for how to draw it. And yes, of course, other pictures may emphasize important aspects that are maybe not so clear here. Anyway, so this was just to give you the flavor. We have a set of boundary conditions, and there's a kind of toolkit how to, and a dictionary how to associate VOAs to them. And the statement then of Kreuzig, Dimov-DeGana, Gier is that if we do this game with, let me scroll back, with this setup here, where we have specified again precise boundary conditions, one can figure out using these rules basically that you would expect Fagin Tunin algebras. And the thing that will play a certain role for us is that these are known. This is a theorem of Sugimoto to have the following type of representation. They represent it as a certain sort of extension of W algebras by a certain class of modules labeled by positive roots in the root lattice of SLN. But there's also a tensor factor here, which looks kind of strange, which is corresponding to finite dimensional irreducible SLN modules with the same weight lambda. So there's the lambda here and the lambda there. Then we're talking here about W algebras. So this would be the simple quotient of a W algebra module with a weight, again, shifted by dual Coxeter. If there's lambda and mu, it is lambda minus, it doesn't appear here, but that is the kernel notation. Okay, so this is, if you wish, I'm taking it here as a way to describe these otherwise a bit hard to describe Fagin-Tipunian algebras, which are relatively famous logarithmic VOAs in terms of other VOAs, which are of a rather conventional type, namely basically W algebras.
I have a question.
Yes. So,
at this point, have you taken the limit psi goes to infinity?
I did, yes. I should say, really, this was a remark I missed to make. So I mentioned there is a parameter psi in general. However, the stories, it was a little implicit here. I had mentioned what we're after is the theory TAGK. And that would correspond to, in 4D terms, so Kapustin-Witten geometric Langmuir twist psi equals to zero. And in the conventions Kreuzig et al. I'm referring to, it would correspond then to taking the parameter little psi that appears here all over the place to infinity. So this is what we're at this stage.
Thank you.
All right, so key features which bring me to the next part of the talk we want to observe are the following. These algebras have automorphisms, and the automorphisms here in case of Fagin-Tipunian for SLN would be complex group would be represented by the complex group PGLN, C. And with a bit of hindsight, this check indicating that what is at work here is part of the Langlands duality package that is built into the N equals 4 super Young Mills. This is just okay. Automorphisms means we have a set of generators which basically follow from this type of representation of Fagin-Tipunian algebras, which are which can be twisted or acted upon by elements of this group. That is point number one, which we just observe here on the way. And what this implies is that we expect that the conformal blocks for these algebra admit twisting with a G check C local systems. I wonder how to describe this this twisting. So for the moment, this is only words. I will introduce a relatively specific way how twisting of conformal blocks with local systems can be described, at least in a simplified example, in a moment. What Kreuzig-Timofte-Garnagier argue is that the spaces of conformal blocks for this algebra with a generic twist can be expected to be 2 to the g, k to the 3g minus 3 dimensional. And there's a very interesting story, I mean, for which I have to really refer to this nice paper of Kreuzig et al. To the semi-simplification of non-semi-simple TQFT at roots of unity, which have attracted a lot of attention lately. So roughly speaking, well, story is quantum groups at root of unity are complicated, have complicated category of representation, non-semi-simple structure, etc., etc. However, they can be, there is a notion of twisting of these categories, which is related to whether in the, well, the generators of quantum groups of root of unity, they have central elements represented as powers of the basic generators of the quantum group. And when you have basically trivial values of these central elements, story is bad and complicated. On the other hand, turning on or representing the center of these quantum groups as a multiplication with some non-zero numbers can simplify life a lot, however, introducing additional freedom. And this is, in fact, expected to be related to twisting with local systems, et cetera, et cetera. And for more on this direction, I refer then to Kreuzig, Timofte-Garner, Gier's work and the work they cite in there. We want to go now in a different but related direction. But anyway, twisting with local systems is the key player from now on. We want to discuss this in a simple example. In fact, the k equals one example of this story here. Okay, see what this gives us. So for k equals 2, 1, on the very first side, you may be afraid that the story becomes a little trivial. So what, again, Kreuzig, Timofte et al. Argue is that this very interesting object Tikunin algebra in this case becomes just a simple lattice view A when we set k equals 2, 1. Anyway, what I want to note in the following is that it looks like something interesting remains for k equals 2, 1. And a few observations that bring us on that track is that, well, on the one hand, what is well known, known for a very long time indeed, is that this lattice view A has a super view A extension, which is just the good old free fermions. And if we're doing SLN, it would be free fermion N, that is N species of complex free fermions. And well, by bosonization, we could recover inside of it the lattice view A VQ. And what's perhaps a little less well known is that there is an analog of this relation here when extended sort of to the super VOA story, which is a consequence of certain bosonization formula, which I've written here. Namely, we can, for k equals 2, 1, basically bosonize the free fermions by taking what? By taking here an auxiliary free boson and its exponentials. And the interesting part, directly corresponding then here to the W algebra part here in this representation of Fagan-Tipunin algebra, is represented by the Virasoro algebra and its degenerate fields. So whereas here in this story, degenerate fields would appear, say, associated to spin 1, 2, 3, and so on. When we sort of go fermionic, or in the world of super VOAs, we could consider here the simplest, the most basic degenerate field of the Virasoro algebra corresponding to, in Katz table notation, 1, 0. But as we're here, the k equals 2, 1 in the conventions I'm using would correspond to c equals 2, 1 of the Virasoro algebra, but it has still interesting degenerate fields, and these are the guys we're using. The degenerate fields satisfy a second order differential equation having two solutions, And the two solutions here are distinguished by this upper index plus or minus. And these are the guys we're using here with a little bit of, notations in order to build the free fermions as a sort of Poissonization formula. And just from, the well-known VOAs of degenerate fields, and of course the even better known VOAs of free bosons, you can check that what this construction does for you is to give you the free fermion VOA. So it is what I'm saying is that this is a very natural and very simple sort of enhancement at k equals to one of that you can do to this type of formula. And so what is kept thereby is in particular, you have this feature here, which is now related to that we are having here two species of free fermions. And this gives you, again, the feature that you have automorphisms with which you can twist the VOA as well as the conformal blocks. So just if you look at this here, you can just act on the indices S with GL2 matrices and on the indices T with the inverse GL2 matrices and preserve the form of the OPE. That's just what that means. All right. So maybe time to ask or look for questions. The next part will be focusing on that example and elaborating relations between twisted free fermion conformal blocks versus Sora algebra and another player, which will be called the tau functions, which are in fact isomonodromic tau functions in that case. I don't.
You're, can you hear me?
Yes.
Oh, great. Sorry, it's a really silly question. So the statement about getting free fermions at k equals one, is that just for SL2? And do you know
no, this here would work for SLn as well, right? So in that case, actually, this wasn't. Yeah, I think. Sorry, I forgot to include it here. It's on a later slide. So S and T, the indices can run from one to n. If you like.
Perfect.
Of course, you have to do something else here with the degenerate fields, but that is, I think, should be basically the degenerate fields then of the W algebra. I think it will work for SLM. Specifically, I have in mind SL2 most of the time from now.
Thanks.
After all, what one can observe just for SLN generalization, you would have the chance to extend the range of indices accordingly because SL3 has third order differential equations then. So you have three values for the upper index. So at least superficially, there's no obstacle to this SLN generalization.
May I ask a question in relation to what I've asked? So do you understand your setup as you have a 4D theory which admits several 3D boundary conditions? When these two boundary conditions meet, you have a 2D interface which supports VOA. This suggests that you can compose these interfaces or do OPE in a sense and get a new one which is a convolution of two elementary VOAs. So this gives you a categorical structure where objects are 3D boundary conditions and morphisms are VOAs, and therefore they can be composed. Is this what your picture in the lower right corner suggests?
That's what it wants to suggest. This is, of course, not at all my story here, but the one of the people I had mentioned here, well, David in particular, but that is sort of, I believe, a restatement of what they suggested.
So VOAs admit convolution in a sense.
Yeah, there's this operation. Well, it will be represented on the VOA level in terms of coset construction. And how much it is already formulated as a, well, in categorical language, I would have to again refer to the experts. I'm not sure. But okay, that's what it is. That's what I understand.
May I ask a question about the twisting construction? From a vertex operator algebra, we can form a vertex operator algebra bundle or a Riemann surface, and then compute the conformal blocks. So in this in your twisted construction, is it means that we first twist, we first build our vertex operator algebra bundle and then twist by a local system and then compute the conformal block?
So, okay, you're helping me into the next part because I didn't really say what was meant, what I meant when saying twisting conformal blocks by local systems, but that is going to be part of part two. It's okay. So I will give a down-to-earth description of what that means, basically right now.
Thank you. So, actually, because it looks very similar to the construction of the Hecke-Eigen D modules.
Well, I believe it's related, in fact, yes. But maybe some more work needs to be done to make the relation fully clear and precise. But yes, you will see.
Yes, thank you very much.
All right.
I have another annoying question. So for the free fermions, maybe you're about to say it. So there's this symmetry of the system, but I thought, I'm wrong, that for free fermions, that symmetry was internal. There's a current.
Of course you can from the free fermions you can build also a current algebra, etc. This is not what I'm using now. I'm just using the fact that we can change the basis in the space of generators of the free fermion VOA by GLN, C. And this is, okay, so the way it is used is on this slide. So
the thing I want to make sure is that it doesn't extend to a group or Katsumudi symmetry.
What I'm talking about here is not extending to Katsumudi. So yes, I think, and indeed, I was and sometimes am confused about these two gadgets that appear in the same game. However, I think they need to be distinguished clearly. There is a Katsumudi you can build from the free fermions, which is not what I'm talking about here. And there is the twisting of the generators, which is the thing here.
Structurally, a Katsumudi internal action would lead to twists by G bundles.
By G bundles, yes. And I think this is the picture to have in mind. So the Katsumudi internal symmetry would allow you to twist the story by G bundles, which I'm not considering here. And then there's a Langlands dual thing, which is the twisting of the generators by G dual local systems.
Thanks, sir. Yeah. So I sort of see that you're saying that this should just be a special case of the sort of construction we were using, but it's a degenerate case, which may
here, of course, in a sense, it appears mixed up somewhat. But I think from the broader picture, one probably wants to distinguish.
Cool.
Anyway, I'm trying to say here a little more precisely, although I can, of course, not now offer a crash course into CFT, what I mean by twisting conformal blocks. So with conformal blocks, okay, there's various ways of introducing them. The point of view that we shall take is that basically conformal blocks define for you functionals on, say, well, products of VOA generators inserted in a little disk around the point. Okay, so this is what here in the middle of the slide is associated. So what do we have? It's not even fully spelled out here on the slide. We have the data of a Riemann surface, a little disk with a coordinate, which is the coordinate, well, X and Y here. And then it gives us a way sort of to, well, insert generators of the VOA and produce numbers out of that. So functionals of that sort, that is a way to define conformal blocks. And of course, it comes with a set of invariance conditions having to do with this, say, holomorphic continuation of such functionals with respect to the positions here of that fields. Good, let's let that be that. So these are conformal blocks. Now, basically, and the story is particularly simple for free fermions, the two-point function characterizes this functional completely. So basically you can think of this basically locally defined function as being an encoding of the abstract algebraic object called conformal block. Now what we can do in order to introduce the twisting is simply to demand that basically the monodromy that you are acquiring upon analytic continuation along simple closed curves or just closed curves on that Riemann surface is represented here multiplicatively by a representation of the fundamental group in to G, L, and C. Well, actually, I would really want to write here P, G, L, and C ultimately. But anyway, such a representation row, of course, what it does is to define a local system. There is the usual freedom to change trivialization at the base point, but having picked one, we have a representation, and then we can require this kind of automorphic properties from the two-point function, and there's a similar formula where we would get when considering analytic continuation with respect to X, where the multiplication would be by rho inverse from the left. Okay, so this is, I think, a concrete way of describing what the twisting means on the level of conformal blocks here now in the case of free fermion VOA. The interesting thing perhaps to notice here is, okay, what abstractly we're doing here. For each fixed choice of a local system, there's going to be a space of twisted conformal blocks, which is defined basically by two-point functions satisfying these quasi-automorphic properties. Okay, but yeah, so in a sense, abstractly, we're forming here over the space of local systems a kind of sheaf with the stalks being the spaces of free fermion conformal blocks that we twist by the respective elements row. All right, and that maybe this is then sort of the slide to discuss before we make a break. I understand I'm supposed to make a break in a few minutes. Here comes, and don't worry, this here is a, well, perhaps a old-looking collection of statements which puts some of our main claims for this case in a nutshell. But okay, I'm walking you through the statements now, and we'll return to some aspects in a little more detail later. So this basically is going to say that this sheaf, in fact, has nice holomorphic structure. In fact, it's basically coming from a structure of a holomorphic line bundle over the space of local systems. And the way it works is as follows. Okay, we're having the space of local systems. We can twist with whatever local system we like. We can cover the space of local systems with charts, and there are famous coordinates, which I can't introduce you here in detail, but let me just state, okay, there are famous well-known coordinates for local coordinates for certain subsets of the space of local systems, which go with the names of Fock-Gontarov, or in some sense related to the Fock-Gontarov coordinates or completing the Fock-Gontarov coordinates, there are sets called Fendre-Nielsen coordinates. The Fock-Gontarov coordinates are associated to triangulations of the Riemann surface, and then there's an algorithm defining them, say, from the local system rho. And the Fendre-Nielsen coordinates, in turn, are related to Pan's decompositions. But in the end of the day, these two types of coordinates are not as different as it may seem. The Pan's decompositions admit certain changes called flips. And when you take limits of the flips in the, say, set of triangulations of the Riemann surface, you will ultimately find Pan's decompositions as limiting triangulations and therefore corresponding Fendre-Nielsen coordinates as limiting values of Fock-Gontarov coordinates. So, I mean, I just want to give you the flavor that there are special coordinates of very nice and particular type that we're using here and that play a key role. And these are the type of coordinates we're using here. From that, I think there will be, these coordinates will appear probably in other talks in this workshop. I'm pretty sure Fei Yan and probably Lotte will talk about them in more detail. So maybe for the time it's forgivable that I'm keeping them somewhat vague here. From them, one can form Dabou coordinates. Dabou meaning there is a natural symplectic structure, holomorphic symplectic structure, the one going back to Goldman and Atiyah Bhatt. And these are the coordinates bringing it in standard form. And you can do it by taking linear combinations of Fock-Gontarov coordinates or Fendre-Nielsen coordinates are directly sort of these Dabou type. So this just means, the Poisson bracket associated to the symplectic structure in that case would be basically diagonal. It would be diagonal in these coordinates. Anyway, here is something mysterious looking. The claim is going to be, this will be explained a little more a little later, that is in the second half, you can find what I call difference generating functions. These are like generating functions for, in the sense of symplectic geometry. So we're having this holomorphic symplectic form, one can define then for changes of coordinates, one can define generating functions. Anyway, all we need to know is that basically these are supposed to satisfy certain difference equations in terms of the pairs of coordinates. So we have for patch U alpha coordinates sigma and eta alpha, and for patch U alpha sigma and alpha and eta beta. Now here, these are things which have a mixed dependence. So they have the sigma coordinates of patch alpha and the sigma coordinates of patch beta. And we shift with respect to sigma alpha, it spits out, and this is sort of one of the defining relations of these gadgets, e to the 2 pi I, the eta coordinate. And very similar, just with the sign, the shift of beta sigma coordinate spits out eta beta coordinates. So there's this kind of symplectic, there's some kind of symplectic geometry behind, but anyway, you can take these just as defining equations for G alpha beta, which is a function defined on overlaps. Yeah, and then what can be more natural than just saying, we would like to define a holomorphic line bundle using these as transition functions. Okay, and furthermore, the claim I want to advertise here and I want to discuss further in the rest of, in the second half of this talk, is that the properly normalized free fermion partition function, which is just where we just introduced the trivial element of the VOA into these functionals characterizing the conformal blocks. So this is what we call partition function, some object defining, which we can make to define on alpha, sigma, and eta. So this parametrizing sort of the choice of row. And so this is a locally defined object. And we will define it, describe it a bit more specifically. And yeah, so these will transform from chart to chart by these guys here called difference generating functions. And furthermore, with respect to the dependence on the local systems, they satisfy a neat system of difference equations, again, reflecting something sort of symplectic. If we shift here sigma alpha by delta, we get a factor, and it's periodic with respect to eta coordinates. And maybe here is where I should stop for a break.